Under the circumstances, Luke had to privately admit, General Drask was surprisingly polite about the whole thing.
"We appreciate the assistance," he said,
standing like a small, immovable pillar in the smoke-stained corridor as a small river of chiss moved past and around him on cleanup duty.
"But in the future, you will not take action aboard this vessel without specific authorization from myself, Aristokra Chafun Bintrano, Captain Brass Talshibarku, or another command rank officer. Is that understood?"
"Clearly," Fell said, before either Luke or Mara could say anything. Drask nodded shortly and brushed past them. "Come on," Fell said to Luke. "Our work here appears to be done." They headed forward. "Certainly a gracious bunch, aren't they?" Mara commented sourly, as more chiss hurried past them going in the other direction. "You have to look at it from his point of view," Fell reminded her. "First of all, we're supposed to be honored diplomatic guests, not volunteer firefighters." "Which brings up a more serious question," Luke said. "Namely, what exactly happened back there? Accident or sabotage?"
"I'm sure they'll be looking into that," Fell said. "But if it was sabotage, it was a pretty poor job of it. Even if those tanks had ruptured, it would only have put one relatively minor sector of the ship out of action."
"Unless that's all the damage the saboteur needed," Mara suggested. "Maybe all he wanted to do was scuttle the mission, or delay it, while another ship was brought out for us to use."
"Fine, but why would anyone want to delay the mission?" Fell asked reasonably. "Everyone aboard seems pretty eager to get on with it."
"Seems" being the operative word, Mara pointed out. "Or maybe our saboteur does want to get to outbound flight, but doesn't want all the rest of us getting there with him," she said thoughtfully. "If he could manage alternate transport for himself while we were left hanging, that again might be all he needs."
"But what would getting to outbound flight first gain him?" Luke asked. "What is it about outbound flight that anyone might particularly want?"
Mara shrugged. "It's old Republic technology," she pointed out, 50-plus years out of date. "That makes it pretty much of historical value only."
"Only to the three of us here," Phil said. "A lot of the cultures in this part of space are pretty primitive, technologically."
Luke shook his head. "I wish we had more information."
"We do," Phil said, sounding puzzled. "Or rather, I do."
Luke looked at him in surprise. "You do?"
"Sure," Fell said. "Before we left, Admiral Park went looking in Thrawn's records for anything he might have on outbound flight. Turns out he had a complete copy of the project's official operational manual. 4 data cards covering personnel lists, inventory manifests, technical readouts and maintenance guides, flight operations, checklists and procedures, schematics, everything. You want to take a look?"
The Imperial transport was docked in a mirror image of the half-port and reception room that the Jade Saber was using on the opposite side of the ship. The stormtroopers were already inside in the ready room, stripping off their armor to check for damage from their battle against the fire, and talking quietly together about the incident.
"You know, I don't think I've ever seen a stormtrooper without his armor before. At least not a conscious one," Luke commented, as Fell led the way through the ready room and into a narrow corridor.
"They do come out on occasion," Fell said with a grin.
"Fine. But why stormtroopers?" Mara asked. "Why didn't you just design and create your own elite force if that's what you wanted?" Fell shrugged.
"Mainly because the psychological advantage was already in place," he said. "Once potential enemies came to respect and fear men in stormtrooper armor, it paid to keep using it."
"Even if not all those inside the armor are men anymore?" Luke asked.
Fell smiled. "Yes, Sumeel. Sumeel is an Ikari, one of the latest peoples to join the Empire of the Hand. He also goes by the warrior name Grappler."
"Your stormtroopers have names?" Mara asked.
"I thought they were just assigned operating numbers."
"Even some of Palpatine's stormtroopers had names," Fell told her.
"We all have names here. In case you're interested, Auric 7 consists of Grappler, Watchman, Shadow, and Cloud."
They emerged from the corridor onto a deserted command deck.
"No one on duty?" Luke asked, looking around.
"Is there anyone on duty in your ship?"
Fell countered reasonably, as he crossed to what appeared to be the main sensor station and waved his guests to a pair of chairs at nearby consoles.
Actually, we don't have a separate flight crew. This kind of transport is designed for a stormtrooper unit to be able to fly by itself, at least on routine operations. Take some of the strain off our pilot cadre.
Does that mean you're low on trained personnel? Mara asked as she and Luke sat down.
Everyone's always low on skilled pilots, Fel said, sitting down and swiveling his chair toward a rack of data cards. He trailed off, and Luke caught a sudden dark flicker in Fel.
What is it? Luke asked.
Well, Fel said, his voice studiously conversational, I think I know now what that fire was all about. The outbound flight operational manual. It's gone.
Really? Mara said, looking over at Fel.
That's handy. Isn't it, though? Fel said.
I take it you don't have another copy? Luke asked.
This was the copy, Fel said. The original records are back on Nirawin.
Let's skip the finger-pointing and see if we could figure out who's got it, Mara said. You have any idea how many people are aboard?
Not that many, Fel said, sounding a little more on balance.
I think this size ship runs a crew of only 30 to 35. There seems to be an honor guard running around two. Call it two squads of six warriors each. Typical ambassador staff runs to 20 plus Formby, so that's 68 chiss, max.
Plus five Jeroons, you and four stormtroopers, Jinsler and us, Luke said.
Unless there's someone else we don't know about.